SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Cost of Living Secrets, brought to you by Ricardo Gonsalves and Peggy Giacomelos for SBS News.
Ricardo, have you noticed how expensive it is to go to the GP?
It's not just expensive. The other issue is finding the time to see a GP.
And to tell us more about how to save money every day when you're seeing your doctor, we're joined by specialist GP Dr. Rebecca Hoffman. Rebecca's also a fellow of the Royal Australian College of General Practice. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
So just to start with, how much does it cost to see a GP?
So that depends on where you live and what your local GP charges. Some of them will be private billing practices. Some will be what's called a bulk billing practice. On average, though, in New South Wales, the out-of-pocket cost to see a GP is about $42.
So you're saying out-of-pocket. So yeah, obviously there are some subsidies in there. Run through
sure
how that works.
So when you go and see a GP, your total cost you'll need in your bank account on that day, on average, is about $90. So you'll pay your GP that $90 and then you'll get a rebate back. That rebate is set by the federal government and at the moment it sits at around $40.
And that rebate's Medicare?
That is Medicare.
And what's the difference between a rebate and a bulk billing incentive?
Sure. So a rebate is your Medicare item number. So that's when the GP sees you. They have a 300-page book that they look to go, this is what item number I can bill for this visit. Most, though, fit an item 23, which is your standard GP visit, which is the $40 item. When a doctor bulk bills, what they're saying is they agree to take that rebate as payment covering the whole visit. So instead of the patient getting the rebate back into their account, the doctor gets the rebate into their account.
So that means the patient doesn't pay anything.
So that means the patient doesn't have any costs that day.
It's all well and good. But how easy is it to find a bulk billing?
And that's because the rebates haven't changed in the last 10 years. So think about how much inflation's gone up in the last 10 years. It's the whole reason we're here doing this podcast. That rebate hasn't changed at all. I'm lying. It's gone up by 50 cents in the past decade. What has changed is the incentive payment. So the incentive payment is introduced this time last year, I'm going to say, which means when a GP chooses to bulk bill you, there's an additional incentive if you meet certain criteria. So those criteria are if you're below 16, over 65, or have a healthcare card. If you're one of those three things, then the GP will also get an additional incentive if they choose to bulk bill you. That incentive payment also varies based on where you live. So yes, it's getting really complicated. So the incentive payment is roughly $12 for Sydney. It can be out to $36 in rural or regional areas. So actually a big, big difference based on where you live.
So for those people that are on a tight budget but still want to see a doctor, how can they find one that bulk bills?
So there's a couple of websites. So one of them is CleanBill and they'll actually say this is the doctors that bulk bill locally. In certain areas, there just are no local bulk billing doctors. So I'm in the Sutherland Shire and there is not a single bulk billing doctor within about a 10-kilometre radius of where I am. There are some that will bulk bill for certain populations like the kids and over 65 and the healthcare card holders, but most just actually can't afford to at all.
Is there a perception that a bulk billing doctor isn't as good as a privately billing doctor?
I don't think there's that perception, but I think the perception is often around how long they'll spend with their patients.
Right.
Because if you choose to bulk bill, your timing and the costs often then mean that you've got less time to spend with that patient.
You mentioned the website that people can go to where they can check to see who bulk bills. But for patients who aren't eligible for concessions and maybe, like you said, they're 10 Ks away from a GP that does bulk bill, what can they do to make visiting the GP a little more affordable?
Yeah. So what I'd suggest is save up all of your questions for the one visit. Mm-hmm. So you need to go to your GP to get your pap smear done. Also get your blood pressure checked, get your regular routine heart check done, get your skin check done, get everything that you need to get done for that next 12 months in that visit. And if you don't know what those things are, your GP can tell you. So most of the time I encourage my patients, when they can, to only see me once a year, because I want to see them and get all of that preventative health stuff done on that visit. And I don't want to see them for another 12 months. Of course, people will get coughs and colds and flus, and telling that to a young mum, they'll laugh at me because they know they see me every other week. But if we can do everything in the one visit, I would far prefer that than spacing it out. There's other options. So if you're on certain medications, you don't need to see your GP every single time you run out of those medications. So seeing many GPs will often offer what's called an online script. So for me, instead of having to come and see me to say, I'm due for my blood pressure medication, you can actually do that online. And that means that cost of that visit is actually closer to $20 rather than the $90. Or most of our medications, so there's a list of about 100 regular medications now. If you're on one of those, we can actually prescribe it for 12 months now rather than just for 6, which means you need to see me half as frequently as you used to.
Not necessarily a money-related question, yeah, but it's an accessing a GP-related sure question. What if your doctor's not available, your regular doctor, or if you're in a different part of town or a different city, mm-hmm, and you need to see a doctor? How's your medical record shared?
It's not.
Right.
Wouldn't it be lovely if it was? Wouldn't it be great if you could walk into any GP practice and they knew what medications you were on, what your allergies were, and some basic medical history? So my health record does exist. And so for the people who have chosen not to opt out, they will have a My Health record. The data that gets uploaded to that, your GP can upload to that. The hospitals can upload to that. But it's not a contemporaneous record of all of your visits to your GP.
Mm. Now, what about allied health service? I understand some are subsidised and some are not.
Yeah. So allied health service, if you meet certain criteria, I'm sounding very criteria driven today. So if you meet the criteria of having a chronic and a complex medical condition, so what that means is quite specific. So chronic means you've had it for more than 6 months, and complex means there's more than 3 people involved in that medical condition. So if you've got diabetes, you'll be seeing your GP, you might be seeing your endocrinologist, you might be seeing your diabetes educator, you might be seeing a dietitian. That meets the criteria for being chronic and complex.
And that sounds expensive.
Yes. So what the government has done is there is an extended primary care program, which means your GP can complete paperwork, and we don't love paperwork, but we're happy to do the paperwork, which then will open up 5 visits to allied health. They're not free, but they attract a Medicare rebate. So what that then means is that your dietitian, your exercise physiologist, your diabetes educator can then give you a rebate for the visits that you see them. That's not unlimited. That's to the number of 5 a year. And that's not 5 per specialty. That's 5 across the specialties.
Across the specialties. And that's not means tested.
No.
Okay. And there's some interesting stats you saw, Ricardo.
So I noticed some stats from the Bureau of Statistics late last year that saw an increasing number of people delaying accessing health services because of cost, right? Across demographics, particularly younger people and women and those that are disadvantaged, the one service that they are delaying the most is dental. Mm. What's the dangers of this, and are there any ways they can reduce their cost in accessing services like dental?
Yeah, that's really scary, because when people come to you and say, I need to decide between going to the dentist or paying for petrol, it's a really, really worrying time. Things we worry about with dentition isn't just cosmetics. It's not just how beautiful your smile is, but your dental health is really important, because buildup of bacteria and gum disease can lead to lots of different problems, not just with your oral health, but with your heart health as well. And your teeth last your lifetime. So you need good dentition when you're a female in pregnancy, when you're young, so that you don't have problems when you're older. What you can do to make it cheaper? It's tricky. because there's not a lot of funding for dental care. In lots of places in Sydney, there is some federally funded programs, but they've got really long wait lists. I'm happy to share with you websites for where they can go to find some locally funded places so people can look up to see if there's one near you. So Sutherland Hospital has one. There's one just outside of Central Train Station, but there is quite a long wait list for them.
And again, they'd be means tested for people who are concession card holders and so on.
Not necessarily. Some of them are, some of them aren't. If they're emergency dental work, they're not. If they're not emergency dental work and they're routine care, then they are.
Now, mental health, we know that you can get visits to psychologists that are subsidised, but I understand there are a few differences between city versus regional.
So mental health is so important. And coming through COVID, we've really seen an explosion of people that require additional mental health services. So again, visit your GP. Your GP is going to know what local services there are and at what cost. Many people will be eligible for what's called a mental health care plan. So a mental health care plan will mean that patients have a diagnosable mental health condition, so anxiety, depression, something along those lines, can be eligible for 10 visits to a psychologist every 12 months. They get 6 off their initial visit and then 4 off their review. And again, that may or may not cover the entire cost of the visit to the psychologist, but that will give a rebate off the total cost. In some areas, the local PHN, so the PHN is the primary health network, there's several regions of those across the state, will also provide what's called PSS, so a psychological support strategy. That does cover the entire cost of visiting the psychologist.
Okay.
So they are free, but they are also means tested. But there are some extra priority groups that are covered under that means testing as well. So it's not just income based, it's LGBTQI, it's domestic violence. There's a few other groups that will fit into the free psychology visits as well.
So patients, when they're visiting their GP, can ask if they're eligible for that scheme?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The you mentioned the pandemic there and things that exploded during the pandemic. The other thing is telehealth.
Absolutely.
Access to calling your doctor or a video call with the doctor. Run us through the costs involved with that. Is it cheaper? Is it more expensive than seeing your doctor?
Yep.
And when is it a good thing to do and when is it not?
How wonderful is it that we were given this option during COVID and people could continue to see their GP, someone they already know, someone they already trust. The cost, out-of-pocket costs are probably about the same.
Right.
So out-of-pocket, you will often be paying the same as if you did go in to see your GP. But what's different is your time, because you can do it on your lunch break. You can do it before work. You can do it just after you've dropped the kids to school. You don't necessarily have to take time off work to go in for that doctor's visit. So that's where the real cost saving is. Now, I love telehealth. I'd love to do more of it. I really think that it means that my patients can access and see me with a significant ease versus having to come in. But as you say, it's not always appropriate. If you want me to look in your child's ear, I can't do it over telehealth. I probably can't assess your skin lesion over telehealth. I definitely can't listen to your lungs over telehealth. I can talk to you about mental health. I can talk to you about your pregnancy. I can talk to you about doing an STD check. There are so many things we can do with telehealth, but it's not appropriate for everything.
Mm. Going to the doctor, sometimes the doctor says the words, you need to see a specialist. Mm. What can you do to save money there? What kind of questions should you ask your GP?
I guess the first thing I want to know from my patients, and I'll often ask them, is whether or not they've got a private health insurance and whether or not they're financially secure at the moment, because that will change our decision on who we refer to. And most local doctors will have a network of people they refer to and have a really good understanding of what those out-of-pocket costs will be. And so if my patients aren't financially secure, then I'm not going to be referring to a private cardiologist. We'll be sending you to the local public hospital, potentially calling the registrar. So that's the doctor who's training to be a cardiologist but is not yet a cardiologist, to ask them for advice if we can't answer it ourselves, knowing that the wait lists to be seen publicly are significant. If you can afford to go privately, we'll often refer privately because we can get you in sooner. So it is a way up between time versus money, but talking to your GP and saying, this is my concerns, this is where my budgets are at, what do you think I need to do? Sometimes we might go, okay, do this, but don't do this. Spend your money on your mental health because that's where it needs to be right now, and we'll wait to see the cardiologist. Or maybe we do that next year, not this year, and we can decide that with you.
And I guess the public health units have become pretty good at triaging who needs to be seen urgently.
Absolutely. And your GP, if they're worried about you, will call the specialist and say this patient needs to be seen sooner.
You mentioned hospitals and triage, right?
Yeah.
What kind of trends are you seeing with people foregoing seeing doctors or getting health specialist advice because of cost, and they're going to the hospital instead?
Yeah, it's really worrying data. So recent data says that it's grown by about 4% in the past 12 months. So 4% of patients who would normally see their GP are going to the hospital instead and sitting in emergency. And that's expected to increase to about 11% over this year, which means the ED is being filled with people that could be seen by their GP instead. And the number one driving factor for that is cost. And that's because it's more financially acceptable for people to sit in emergency than to go and sit at their GP.
Referrals. I mean, I see a specialist for a condition and I have to go in fairly regularly to get a referral. Can I minimise the amount of times I go in to get that referral?
Absolutely, you can. So your specialist is going to need a referral every 12 months from your GP. The reason for that is that they get an up-to-date history, up-to-date medication list, and a general, this is how you're going. And yes, your GP wants you to keep seeing that specialist. Now, if anything's changed, if you've had any significant medical change in that 12 months, you absolutely should go in and get a new referral. Now, you may not have to actually see your doctor to do that. We offer online referrals, and many GPs do offer online referrals, which one, again, saves us time. So you don't have to take a day off work to go and get your referral, but often will save you money because the cost of doing an online referral is often less than doing a face-to-face doctor's visit. The second option is if it's a really stable, long-term problem and nothing has changed and you're medically otherwise really fit and well, and this is something you're going to be needing to see a specialist for a really long time for, you can ask for something called an indefinite referral. Now, what an indefinite referral means is if that specialist is seeing you for that same condition, they don't need a new referral every 12 months.
We've spoken about access to the doctor, access to referrals, saving money in different parts. But one of the reasons why we go to see your doctor is to get some medicine.
Yeah.
So what about the costs of medicine? And talk us through the PBS and how that subsidises the cost so that consumers or patients don't necessarily have to pay the full cost of accessing the medicine.
Yeah. So the PBS is fantastic. The PBS means that the government has subsidised, so reduced the cost of medications across a phenomenal number of medications. So things that may cost millions of dollars for treatment, you pay your standard $37 script. If you have a healthcare card, that comes down to $6 to $7. Once you've met your safety net threshold for the year, again, that comes down to $6 to $7. And I know we haven't spoken about safety net threshold, but we might do that as well. What to know? You need to know if your medication is on the PBS, and your GP can tell you that before they prescribe it. So if they're prescribing something like antibiotics, blood pressure medication, diabetes medication, most of those things are on the PBS, which means your out-of-pocket costs are going to be less than $40. And if you have a healthcare card, it's going to be around about $6, so significantly less. If you're on one of those medications that we can prescribe for 12 months, then you can actually get 2 months' supply every time you go to the pharmacy instead of one. So again, saving you time and again, saving you money.
How do they typically decide what is on the PBS?
It's magic.
It's magic. You mentioned safety net threshold.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So a Medicare safety net threshold. So you can either have that as an individual or amalgamate with your family and have that with your family. So once you've met your safety net thresholds, say that 10 times fast.
Safety net thresholds.
For the year, then after that, Medicare will actually cover 80% of your out-of-pocket costs for everything. So what that means is if you then go to see your GP and the normal costs are $90, instead of your rebate being 40, it's actually going to be 78. So your out-of-pocket costs then to see your GP is only going to be $11. So it's really important to know when you're up and when you're met your safety net threshold, if your whole family has met it or if you've met it. Because with some of my patients, I'll say, you've met it. Let's go see the cardiologist. Let's go see the dermatologist. Let's do all of these things that we need to do now because it's going to cost you less now.
How do you find out if you've met the threshold?
It's on your Medicare app.
Okay.
So if you're on your Medicare app and you click into My Medicare, scroll right down to the bottom and it will tell you exactly where you're up to on your Medicare safety net threshold.
Right. And if you're lucky enough to be a healthy person who doesn't need to go to the doctor very often, well, then you just
then you may not meet it.
Yeah.
Speaking of health, one other big cost when you're accessing services is private health insurance, right? At what point does someone really need to start thinking about, hey, A, do I need it? B, do I need to increase my cover? C, is it worth it?
So often for females, that conversation happens when you're starting to think about babies. So as soon as you're starting to think about pregnancy and pregnancy care, that's a decision that you need to think about. And that's because your options are going to be public or private. And if you want to have a private obstetrician and have a private delivery, then you're going to need to have private health insurance or have very large costs. So that's when females usually think about it. In Australia, we're really lucky. Our trauma services, our cancer services, our public hospitals are fantastic. So if you don't have private health insurance, you will still have excellent medical care in the public system. If you have private health insurance, your options are increased. So it means you can see a private specialist without the additional fees or with a portion of those additional fees covered. You would be able to get operations like knees or hip replacements done in the private hospital system. So the decision of when to think about private health insurance is entirely based on your finances or when you can afford it. There are some tax benefits of having it. And so when you've met those tax thresholds, it's worth thinking about having it because it reduces your taxable income. And then what your medical needs are for the next 12 months, 5 years, 10 years ongoing.
I think we've covered quite a lot there. Thank you so much, Rebecca, Dr. Rebecca Hoffman. That wraps up this edition of the podcast. And remember to subscribe for more as we explore how to save money every day, from supermarkets to good health